the fact that networking is a true king and it's going to help you on a daily basis in the next 10 years or in the next 20 years, you have to put a bit of effort week in, week out. Even if you connect to a new person every week, is a massive progress, right? Make a new connection every week. Take that courage. That's one other. Take that courage to, you know, whether it's LinkedIn or whether through a connection that you know already, try to get a little referral or a little intro email to someone else. So you need the courage to reach out to people.
Hi, and welcome back to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, your source of inspiration and action from African leaders and founders. I'm Jason DeLory, innovation specialist and serial entrepreneur, and I get to be your host for today's show. And on today's show, we are joined by Stefano Rose from Australia. He's a founder at Next Avenue. He's a technologist and strategist. How are you doing there, Stefano?
Hi, Jason. Good, thanks. Good to be on the show today.
It's great to have you on the show. And before we deep dive into our topic today, which is about the African diaspora and the importance of staying connected, do you mind giving our audience a bit more about yourself and sharing your journey of how you got here?
Sure. Look, I think we have to talk about, let's say, when I was a teenager, I always wanted to go abroad, right? So let's say that I made necessary steps and mistakes as well to, you know, finish school, go to uni. I dropped school early, by the way. I don't have an HSC. I don't have an HSC certificate, which is a bit weird, but I managed to get to uni, went for uni. And then I said, all right, it's time to add a big company on my CV so that can help me when I move abroad. It would have been then easier for me to get a job, right? Having a bit of a build up credibility, I would say. Yeah. So I finished uni around 2012 in Mauritius. And then it's only around 2015 that I managed to move to Australia.
Right, great.
Moved to Australia. I was still working with a large firm in the consulting world. And then it's been now a year and a half that I started Next Avenue.
Oh, that's great.
That's a bit of a journey at a high level.
Yeah.
But surely I would share more of that journey as we go through the show.
Yeah, it's great. And what's interesting there is your route to becoming an entrepreneur, you know, going with one of the big four consultancy firms and then making that move abroad. But what drove you from, you know, what was that moment when you decided, okay, I'm done with the corporate world, I want to start my own venture? What drove you to become an entrepreneur?
I think that's an interesting question, right? And if I have to reply it in honestly, I would say for me, there hasn't been a moment that I said I had enough of working for large firms and moved to start a company. I always believe that, you know, we start with that will somewhere driven by our ambitions. My real drive is about giving back to people and empower people. And I know I would be in a better position to empower people and, you know, build the next leaders for say, or provide a platform for next founders of a company to start maybe under our company, under Next Avenue. So to build a platform for the next founders, right? So driven a lot by, let's say, my will to empower people, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's been a build up over the years. I can't remember when, maybe in my early 20s, to say, you know, having big dreams and, you know, let's go chase them. You know, not knowing exactly where you would end up, you know, you have that idea of like, all right, I always wanted to move to Australia when I was younger. And then, you know, your dream then evolves. You know, you can do a couple of years in Australia, you know, build up something, then move to another place like the US or the UK. But yeah, I always believe that there's no moment that, you know, I don't function in that way where it's, all right, I had enough of it, let's move to start a company. But instead, it's been a build-up over the years. And also, it's a plan that aligns with, let's say, my strategy, my life strategy, and my dreams and ambitions. So, yeah.
Yeah, and what with that move to Australia, you wanting to make that a priority in your career, in your life, and what attracted you to moving to Australia then, rather than staying, let's say, in the African ecosystem?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, look, if I have to talk about why picking Australia, maybe I'll talk about why picking Australia in the first place.
Yeah.
I think I was always fascinated by this country. When I was a kid, my cousin went to Australia when I was still little, and you know, bringing back, you know, koalas and kangaroos and the like. So you know, you get inspired a bit, and then you're watching TV, you see the opera house and the bridge, and you see, wow, that's like massively developed country. Mm-hmm. There's a lot happening there. You know, it's booming. So, and then I was like, okay, you know, you have a lot of dreams. You know, crazy dreams, right? Start a company and, you know, go around the world. But yeah, that might be a good start. You know, go to Australia. You can learn a lot of things. It's a great market. It's a massive country. There's a great opportunity for me to build up momentum, both from a culture standpoint, but also from a professional standpoint and networking standpoint. So hearing people saying, Australia is a land of opportunities all the time. And I think that's one of the choices as well for Mauritians going to study abroad. That's a big choice for them, you know, moving to Australia, because there's a lot of opportunities. You get to stay for a bit of time and all of that. So, I picked Australia, I believe, because it would have provided me the good start point, a good anchor point for my long, let's say, life journey. Going into the entrepreneur world, building companies, empowering people, and so far it's been great, I would say.
That it does sound like a hell of a journey. And what's interesting there as well, you know, you speak about this whole journey, and early on you mentioned that, you know, it was filled with mistakes as well, and that's how you learned. So this is a question, and something we love to ask our guests is, would you be willing to share your biggest failure and what you learned from it, and how it helped you build this journey that you're on?
Well, maybe let's start back with that. There's been a couple, right? Some of them I see as failures, but some of the people won't see as failures, right? And again, it's about your standards, about how much momentum you want to put into, you know, the company you're building, whether it's a tech startup or, you know, a technology consultancy firm like we do. One of the first ones I would say is dropping school when I was after SC, right? Form five, as we say in Mauritius. So I dropped school there because, I believe that I could move to Australia. I was so obsessed believing that, it would happen. But coming from humble beginnings, I was kind of blind at that time. I knew that we wouldn't be able to make it financially, but I had that. I persisted in that direction. Right? I kept eye on that big picture. Right. So I dropped school. That's one of my big mistakes. But I would say this mistake helped me learn and be more robust and more resilient, because after I dropped school, I tried to get back into a polytechnic school in Mauritius, but didn't work out well. And then I went to work in textile factory, then a couple of jobs back and forth. So it's been a bit of turning around and you know, skidding and slipping, I would say. Then as I was, let's say, you know, in my early 20s, I would say just before I turned 20, that I got the chance to join uni, right? Which was a bit of a miracle plus a bit of a savior, because that mistake of dropping school, I see that as a big mistake, right? Because I was in a rush for other things to happen. Got a bit lucky to get back on track, but that mistake helped me learn a lot in life, right? A lot of about hard work, about giving back to people, about you know, being consistent in your effort day by day, so you can harvest the results. So it surely brought a lot of learning there, you know. So it surely built my let's say the resilience and the courage over the years, right? So after our job scores been, maybe four years of struggling before I managed to get to uni.
That's an amazing story. And it's something that a lot of the entrepreneurs and out there, again, looking at the comparison between our narrative versus, you know, those stories we hear from abroad where, you don't need to go to university, you don't need to go to high school, you just drop out if you have an amazing idea and everything will sort itself out. I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, would you warn people against that notion that, you know, education is not necessarily paramount in being a success as an entrepreneur?
Well, I would say there's a worldwide movement now to revamp the education system. Yep. Let's put it this way. Although I think that, when I think about that, you know, dropping school to do other ventures, it can work out or it might not work out. It depends on your courage. It depends on your drive. It depends where you are as well. You know, where are you located? Are you in the UK? Are you in Mauritius? That can change the game, right? Are you in a larger market where there's a lot more opportunities? The education system, I believe, is getting old.
For sure.
And let's put it this way: for example, in Mauritius, we're not aware of that entrepreneurship mindset in our young age, right? Everybody sticks to the normal formula, which is go to school, try to go to uni, get a job or get a job in a bank, and that's it. It's a stable job, you know. Live your life. That'll be great. Get married, get kids, and you know the same exact formula, right? I'm not saying to future entrepreneurs to avoid skipping school or dropping school, but we've seen it in the US. The people who drop, they finished their high school, but they dropped uni and they went on starting massive companies, right?
Microsoft.
All those guys, they've done it, right? Yeah. And it might work. And if we look at the global market, and if I have to put an example of an ecosystem, like we work in the Salesforce ecosystem. And globally, that company, for example, would tell you that there would be scarce, you know, resources are going to be scarce on the market, right? So there's going to be the demand going to be at a peak, but the number of, let's say, people either coming from uni who are ready to work on the market is very little. So there's a lot of, strategies and approach to, even before people start uni, for example, right, try to get them on board on the work market and work on those big SaaS platforms very early on, right? Which means that, there would be openings for people to, skip uni and go on and build a business, go on and build a venture. Yes, it would depend, I would say, on your mindset, because everybody is different. We all have, we're all unique, I would say. I always believe in that. And our drive is different.
And we all have different journeys to get there.
Exactly. And everybody's journey is unique. Yes.
And you also speak, which I quite agree with you, you know, that gap between the education and the work environment, you know, aligning the skills and tools needed for people coming out of university to match the education system. And you make a comparison between Australia and Mauritius, where, you know, there is a very different education system in place, with entrepreneurship not being something that is either encouraged or even taught at school. And I was wondering to know if you see any parities in terms of the differences between once you're now in the entrepreneurial or startup ecosystem in Australia versus what you saw in Africa in terms of the ecosystem that you were a part of. What are the key differences you see in both ecosystems?
That's interesting. I've had, maybe I should start from a culture standpoint. To circle back to that, to culture. In our culture, our parents, for example, raise us without, that's the ideal, right? You go to school, you know, you go to uni or you get a job just after school and you stick in that job and work hard, right? Mm-hmm. You know, let's put it this way, like pray for the best.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a bit of that formula. The other factor I would see is the markets are different, right? If we look at the, you know, let's put it this way, the amount of money flowing in the large countries like the UK, Australia, and the US compared to Mauritius, South Africa, and, you know, Kenya, and although we should avoid Nigeria because it's a booming ecosystem. Let's put it this way, it's the Silicon Valley of Africa, right? Like generally in Africa, you know, there's that money investment and infrastructure aspect. They're like the differences, right? In one part of the world, you have people thriving because they have more stable infrastructure. You know, from water to hospital to social services and all of that. They have an environment to thrive, right? Yep. And now comparing with Africa, I'm not saying that we have not at all, but you know,
the
infrastructure is different, right?
Yeah.
The amount of investment poured in is again different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're like the key factors. Culture, because we stick to the known. We're not, let's say, we don't love the new. We're not super adventurous, you know. But the West, you know, the other countries, the larger economies, they're more. People try new things more often, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But that's what I see. So in Mauritius, for example, we love our comfort zone. Nothing bad with it, I would say. there's two large groups of people. A group who loves their 9-to-5 jobs, but to make sure that we have a lot of 9-to-5 jobs, we need another group who are willing to take risk, right? So that's another key factor. Being potentially, you know, be a bit risk lover and risk averse. Again, when we talk, we can talk a long time about risk, but you know, you can take calculated risk. It doesn't mean that you just need to pour all your savings into something and just pray for the best for it to happen. No, it doesn't work this way. So you can work it out. Risk can be, you know, you can always plan and monitor. Mm-hmm. Execute and go on, iterate like that, right? So I think they're like my biggest, the largest differences, right? Surely are other things. Governments and regulations play also an important role. Now when I think, you know, that's another
looking
thing
back.
How much does governments help to facilitate innovation and entrepreneurship in a country?
Exactly.
You know, in terms of, you know, tax laws, regulations, grants, you know, incubators, conferences and bringing, you know, external experts from other different countries to help out. What's the involvement into setting up local bodies, whether it's at universities or you know, it's a separate, you know what, you know, if you look at the UK, for example, they have a whole department of innovation. The US, the same thing. Australia, the same thing. Well, but we, when we look at Mauritius, you know, we're not yet there.
No. I agree.
We will get there though. We will get there. It'll take a bit of time, but so that again,
so
government plays a big role.
I think you raise, you know, a huge point there. That ability to be public sector enabled, but having that private sector lead the innovation is so key for the economies we've seen across the thriving first world countries. But you also raise, I just want to pick up on some of the points you raised, that cultural difference as well, affecting more than just how we spend our time, but how we work, how we start businesses. And I think the two words you use, which are so key and ingrained in our culture, is that stability factor being number one, in the sense that stability, because of the climate that we've grown up in and that we see you know, the difference in the wealth gap and things like that. That stability is something that is so coveted in the African culture where, you know, if you have, whether it's a doctor, lawyer, accountant, whatever, if it's a stable, or even in the government, if it's a stable job, that is you making it. That is seen as success. Whereas in other developing countries, that is seen as the ultimate worst. You know, I don't want to be doing the same job 9 to 5 for the rest of my life. Yeah. Where in Africa, like, that is the goal. So it's really interesting. I mean, culture playing so much of a part of that. And we, as we know, culture takes so long to change and to affect. And then the other word you mentioned is infrastructure. And I think that is so true as well. With the infrastructures we have in the developed world versus the African context, yes, we have some of the infrastructure, but the infrastructure in the developing world has been there for 50, 60 years developing this ecosystem. And we are a bit behind, but, you know, we do have the possibility to grow it, to affect it, and to build it in our image that we see the good and the bad from the, you know, the other countries we're exposed to. So this leads me to one of the things I want to ask you. And I think I admire the way you do it. And I'm very, very positive about how you do it. And I think it's something that's very key to diaspora and entrepreneurs, is that ability to stay connected with your local ecosystem. I mean, I know you, for example, have calls daily, if not one, several calls daily with people in Mauritius and around. And you very much stay connected on the pulse of your own local ecosystem. Now, why do you think that's important?
Well, we nowadays, let's say, live in a global connected economy, mm-hmm. right? So the way I think about the world is I'm a global citizen. I was born and raised in Mauritius, and I'm a Mauritian. You know, in the heart and all the time, always. Giving back is very important. But also to be able to give back, you have to go out and acquire culture, knowledge, experience, contacts, networks, you name it. There's so much that you have to acquire to be able to give back, right? You have to empower yourself and you know, equip yourself. It's staying connected, a good point. So one of my biggest dreams is to make sure that we have Mauritius on the world map, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's like a tech startup or a large consulting company. So that's one of my main goals, and I want to make sure that we build a few leaders from Mauritius, mm-hmm. you know. Being known around, let's try to bring Mauritius to the stage, right? So to the world yep. stage, and a lot of my, you know, a lot of those calls every day I spend, you know, working on projects and building up the momentum in the team, in the training, in terms of future initiatives, and in terms of like little products initiatives that we have internally. So it doesn't only stop within our own team, but it goes way beyond. So I try to be back home twice a year. Well, if we forget about COVID, I'll surely be home.
Yeah.
I'll surely be home, and we'll surely be grabbing a coffee, Jason, as we did in the past, as an example. But when I come, I'm always connect with people mm-hmm. From other organizations to share insights, you know, share what I acquire from abroad, and also to learn about what you guys are doing mm-hmm. back home, and try to bring a bit of a contribution there, right? So, and there's also quite a bit to learn from you guys, the way you're operating. I don't want to say it's drastically different from the way people operate in companies.
But there abroad, is that difference. Yeah,
there's that difference. It's always an opportunity to learn something.
Which is a great way to look at it.
Exactly.
Giving back part, I just want to catch on that. You talk about the want and willingness to give back. And you say about bringing the knowledge and the learnings that you've built up over the years in a different you know, different setting, but it can be a challenge bringing some of those learnings back and trying to, you know, trying to get the adoption within the local ecosystems. I mean, have you faced those challenges, you know, trying to implement what you've learned abroad and putting it into the context of your local ecosystem?
True. I did stumble on, let's say, you know, when you connect with people and try to reach out for a meeting or a general catch up. That's for general life. Not everybody's interested. Everybody's kind of busy. You know, that's a general rule now, and everybody got their own agenda. So they don't necessarily see clearly what they can, let's say, win out of a conversation of 15 minutes or 30 minutes. That's a bit of a challenge sometimes. But look, I put it this way, you know, when you contact people, if you get a yes, it's a yes. If you get a no, take the no. If it's a maybe, also take it as a no and move forward. Because there's so many people out in the world, there's so many people back home in Mauritius that you can connect to and, you know, build meaningful networks, right? I pulled out that word, there's 24 hours in a day. There's only a number of, let's say, people that you can talk to in a day week, right? It's very important to spend that time wisely, making meaningful connections. Where both parties can actually have a bit of a win-win, right? So I believe in that win-win aspect.
That's so true. And I think, you know, it's something that is very commonly, overlooked, is that there is an ability, or there should be a two-way street. Yes, you are bringing your knowledge back to help and, you know, support the growth. However, there's also elements that you can learn as well. And I think some of the African diaspora, even myself, when I was away from Africa, I was almost in the mindset that, no, what they're doing here is better, and this is the way it should be done. Whereas with more I've got is like, yeah, it can't necessarily be done like that in Africa. And if it's not possible to do that, these are the kind of ways that we have developed to go around it. So I think it's really interesting, that two-way street you talk about.
Yeah, and you hear it quite often now. You have, you know, people have to unlearn sometimes to learn the new, right?
Yeah.
And another comment I'll put here is, yes, if you are a bit of Mr. Nobody and coming around and try to make connections with people, whether, you know, try to get a first meeting to talk about what you do as a company, where how you can, you know, how you can help them, or vice versa. Yes, because you were Mr. Nobody. Yep. Again, some people are reluctant to make connections, right? They would only know people that they would stumble on in a conference physically.
Yep.
And, you know, try to be a bit, you know, not, I don't want to say closed-minded, but reluctant to change, reluctant to make new connections. Look, it happens. Everybody's different, and you know, we have to be have that wisdom to accept that.
I really agree with you, and it raises a really important point that you say there, which is that network, that that ability to make sure that you are known. You know, in Africa, they put a premium on who you know. And the network almost more than what you're offering, whereas that it can be very different in other ecosystems, where it's more about your merit, what you can show your company can do. Whereas in Africa, we still rely on a lot of who you know. And one of the things I have seen myself, as well as knowing some of that other diaspora who've moved back to the continent and tried to start endeavors, tried to start companies. And, you know, one of the first things they tell me is like, you know, I can't get a meeting with so-and-so, or, you know, I'm unable to open this or that. And that's because they haven't built that network. But your approach is to never have lost that network and keep it strong as you are working and learning abroad, which I think is so key and something we forget. And it adds value to both sides. As you say, it's a win-win. So I really do think, you know, as an entrepreneur or even just a professional out there who's working abroad, who's moved away from Africa, you need to make an effort to stay connected to your network in Africa, because when you come back, that will facilitate so much. You know, it is so important in Africa to be introduced, to be known by somebody who knows somebody. And I think that's a great point you raise.
Yes, if I want to put a funny way of saying is, networking is a true king.
Yes. Right.
It kind of rhymes as well. So yeah, networking is a true king. I'm a firm believer of that. And look, in a smaller economy, obviously you have less people, which means that there's less people you can tap into, less meaningful connections you can make. You know, not everybody wants to be your friend or connect with you and make things move forward. But in larger economies, that, you know, you have, if you pick the US, 350 million people. So, you know, so many people you can connect to and build great companies and, you know, go out and build great NGOs or whatever you would like to build, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, someone's bound to like you in 350 million, huh? But I like that, and I think, like I said, I think it's really important. But you do it very well. So, what advice would you give someone, for example, listening to this podcast, who is maybe abroad, away from Africa, but still wanting to stay connected, or maybe go back one day and still maintain this network? What advice do you give to them? How best do they approach maintaining their network and one foot, as it's called, staying in Africa?
Well, I should say that it requires a bit of effort, right? So, and to come back to the fact that networking is a true king and it's going to help you on a daily basis in the next 10 years or in the next 20 years, you have to put a bit of effort week in, week out, which means that, you know, it depends how much you want to stay connected. That's another point. For me, I value that a lot, which means that it's quite a lot of hours that I applied it on a weekly basis. But for another person, it might be 2 hours, might be 1 hour. Even as I was saying to someone earlier today, even if you connect to a new person every week is a massive progress, right? Make a new connection every week. Take that courage. That's one other. Take that courage to, you know, whether it's LinkedIn or whether through a connection that you know already, try to get a little referral or a little intro email to someone else. So you need the courage to reach out to people. I would say that, you know, by nature, I was never a salesperson or a business development person. It only takes courage. One of the biggest advice I can give to entrepreneurs is, courage is key, right? Yep. Because we were not born as sales leaders and massive marketers and great technologists, right? We all have we can be good in many things, but I believe we can be very, very good in one specific thing. For example, sales is not my side. But I take the courage to connect to people, reach out, LinkedIn, Facebook. And at some point, try to post some stuff as well. Try to post some stuff. It's very, very simple. You know, put some hashtags on LinkedIn and you would see that people are going to reach out to you. And, you know, out of a lot reaching out, definitely make some meaningful contact where you can collaborate further. Yes, this means that physically every week you have to put away some hours to build your network.
Make it a priority.
And make it a priority. It's not only when you need a job or want to change a job that you're going to reach out to network with people. Yeah. It has to be done every day. I like to do it every day. I love grabbing a coffee, meeting somebody new in my ecosystem because it's important for you to, especially when entrepreneurs building a business. We are in the consultancy world. And that's so important and key for us to network with partners and customers and, you know, future prospects or other companies. I don't see in an ecosystem competition being competition. because there's so much work that, you know, we can, where people can all win together and make customers progress and delight customers. Mm-hmm. So you can also partner with other companies to accomplish a piece of work at the customer, right? So again, that network part is so key. Mm-hmm. Right. And it requires effort. It requires courage. It requires time. You need to be dedicated, else it's not going to be done. You cannot go halfway about it. It's either you're fully in or you don't do it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's interesting, you mentioned courage and dedication. And these are, you know, traits that we hear all entrepreneurs, you know, there's that courage, that dedication. But I like the aspect that you add where not only do you need that courage and dedication in, you know, chasing your idea, chasing your dream, but you also need it in the other aspects of your role, even your career, you know, that courage to reach out, that courage to stay connected with people, the dedication to put the time aside and do it as a regular thing to maintain that. You know, you're saying those traits which entrepreneurs will have, and just applying them in a different way to make sure that other aspects are taking the same attention that, for example, you know, the dedication and courage to leave your job or to start something new. I like that aspect, and I like how you're not learning a new skill. You know, you're not having to learn a new skill. You don't need to be this amazing networker who does 1,000 posts a day, but you're just using your mindset and applying it in a different context, which I really like. Yeah.
Yes. So if I can throw another, you know, funny thing there about courage is, courage was something that was always there. We just mm-hmm. didn't realize it. When mm-hmm. we were cavemen, we needed the courage to go out of the cave to find food.
So
it has always been around. The only thing that changed is the number of people on Earth, the amount of buildings, technology, and so on and so forth. So,
and but how comfy,
courage was, I think,
how comfy that courage, cave is, huh?
So courage was always there, I think, as one of our, let's mm-hmm. say, core, or not core, is kill value, or, you know,
That
was always in our blood, so, yeah.
Exactly. So now I know we're getting close to the end of our conversation, and it seems like we could talk for hours, but one of the other aspects that I really wanted to get your unique perspective on is you have managed to grow your company and have conducted your business, through global practices in terms of being able to break down the geolocations. You're operating in more than one country, and you're able to manage that. And that is also something that the digital age has enabled, and something that a lot more African companies are starting to do. But it does bring its own challenges. I was wanting to know if you could share any advice for entrepreneurs looking to conduct, you know, global business or to conduct digital business across borders. What advice would you have to them?
Yeah, I think one of the, again, we're going to put the network thing there. Mm. Reach out to people in the new market, for example. One thing we do is we reach out to recruiters and other people working in different consultancies in different parts of the world, in the UK and the US.
Yeah.
Right. And we try to have a regular cadence chat to talk about, you know, market insights and the whole ecosystem, you know, every 2 weeks, for example. Right. So you have to reach out to people and ask for 15 minutes. Because you would have a common interest, and it's about like, hey, you know, would like to catch up to talk a bit about the ecosystem in that region. This is what we're doing here, and you know, we're looking at expanding in X region, right, in US or in the UK, for example, or in Singapore. Lincoln is a good place. You know, try to locate a few people there, just reach out to them and catch up. That's one thing. Another thing is having a customer that is big enough and operates in multiple regions is definitely an important thing, and can be a key piece of your strategy to, let's say, go on that global reach, right? Because if, that definitely helps your let's say your use case, right? It'd be easier for you to put use cases forward nicely and talk about that customer success story to other potential new prospects or to recruiters, whoever your target and audience are, like, you know, CIOs or CEOs, or that definitely helps having customers that operate, you know, trying to acquire a customer that operate in multiple regions, even if they're small, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But having that customer and delight them is key.
That's right. Great. So, and it's something you can do on the ground where you are. You know, it's not about having a team in another country. You can work on that in your own ecosystem. You can build that client with a strategic ambition to then bid for, you know, jobs that they have in other countries. I really love that approach. And I think it's something that should be considered when you're looking at, you know, geo expansion.
We've seen with COVID that movement around and flying around, for example, in the US or in over Europe, you know, that has been movement has been very restricted, right? We all know that. Not many planes in the sky, which means that the tech startup ecosystem in UK, or everywhere globally, right? UK, Australia, in the whole Asia Pac or US, we've seen venture capitals or angels investing go out to, you know, to invest in other countries. Now we've seen a massive acceleration of that. So try to tap into that. Try to reach out to angels in other locations. Yeah. I'm very sure now with what happened with COVID, for example, there's a big move for VCs and angels to open up to other regions. Right. Yep. So that reach out, it's about reaching out to people, right? Mm-hmm. Try to reach out early, even if those angels are in other regions. Yeah. And if we look at, I don't know, you might be a small tech company in Mauritius and you have a great idea and you have a bit of momentum. If you're looking for scale, yeah, why not reaching out to VCs in Europe or US? Why not? You have to try it at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Takes a bit of courage and determination.
Exactly. It takes courage, right? Reach out to people because mostly everyone is on LinkedIn.
Yep.
Send a little message, try to ask for 15 minutes and yeah, that's where it starts usually.
Yeah. And it's so true. One of the points I just wanted to pick up on was you mentioned partners and I completely agree with you. It is key to, you know, to that expansion, to knowing those markets, to learning. But one of the barriers we see with people who not too keen on taking on partners in different countries is the perceived danger of a partner being able to, you know, screw you over or to, you know, not give you the full details of a job or takes your money off the top. You know, what do you do in that situation? What would you advise? Like, how do you manage that? How do you negate that danger and get over that fear?
I think there's a trust factor there. Mm-hmm. And trust builds up with time. And let's put it this way. If you have to partner with another company in a specific region to deliver services to your customers, think about it backwards. So you know that if you want to start operating in 3 months there in that region or 6 months, it's actually yesterday that you should have been, you know, connecting to that potential partner company. Try to build up the trust, try to connect early, see whether it's going to be worth working together. So, because trust doesn't build overnight, and I would say it should have been a part of your job to build that and it way early, right?
Yeah.
However long it takes, the longer the better, usually.
Yeah,
right? That's one way I look at it. Yeah, it starts, you know, it's a backwards approach, but it has to start way early. That's one way of seeing it. As I said to you, partnerships are super strong key element in building great tech companies and great, you know, even consultancy companies, right? Because the power of partnerships, we have to look at it as a two-way traffic road, mm-hmm. where you would bring, you would go to market yourself. You can have a team of business reps and go to market and, you know, yep. sell, you know, propose the products of that larger partner firm, that larger tech company, or vice versa. If you've done well out there delivering services for customers and done good implementations, that improves your credibility and builds up the, let's say, the trust on your brand to delight customers. So the larger tech company is going to bring back for your door, right? But partnerships, it's not only about signing a partnership with a company and let it be on a piece of paper, on a DocuSign. Yeah. But it's a constant week in, week out work yeah. to keep maintaining that and keep building the trust and keep meeting new people from, you know, from both parties, right? So partnerships are so strong now. And if we put all the largest tech companies out there, like the Microsoft, the SAP, the Salesforce, there's a massive partner ecosystem that is down there, you know, supporting and contributing into the success of those large companies, right?
Yeah.
So yes, if you are a very early stage tech company or even a consultancy firm, value partnerships, they are key for your growth, definitely.
Great. Yeah, and I love the what you say is to negate some of those perceived dangers and stuff. You build up that trust, and I quite love, you know, that formula where trust is basically equal to consistency over time. So you can't expect yes. these things to happen all at once. You have to build them, like you say. If you are wanting a partnership, you need to start 6 months in advance building that relationship, starting slow, testing that trust, you know, taking it bigger and bigger. You can't just dive in, you know, build the trust. And I think that's so key. And a lot of our listeners out there, is it's a great point to take home. Now that we're approaching the end, and it has been such a pleasure having you and for you sharing your journey and your advice, just one more piece of advice for our entrepreneurs or any aspiring entrepreneurs listening is, what piece of advice would you give them or give your younger self when you were starting out this entrepreneurial journey?
There's quite a few things I want to share here, that's for sure. So I would say that get the team right very early stage, even if it's, you know, before you mm-hmm. start the journey. Get yep. your team on board. Get the co-founders starting. The best is to get the co-founders start at the same time you're starting, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or at least share, set the right expectations before you start. So team aspect. Now, once you start, you have to run. Speed matters, right? Don't try to be efficient and you know, automate things, or you need speed. When you're a small company, you're not a large firm. You don't have unlimited resources of people and money that you can burn out, you know, for every week to get things accomplished. So you need speed. You're still small, so cut out. You know, if you're starting a tech company, it doesn't mean that you need a product ready. Go out and recruit your customers on the ground. Go out and spend time with potential users, and do that quickly. Do that frequently, because that's the most important thing, rather than going to spend time coding, as an example. Yeah. It doesn't need to be straight away go on coding, right? Yes, and that comes to another piece of advice, right? Recruit your first customers very quick, even though if you have to do, you know, if you have to do part of the job manually, or so you got to recruit those customers very early. Make sure you delight those customers as well. Delight yeah. your customers is going to bring more delighted customers. That's the flywheel they talk about,
yeah.
right? The customer's flywheel. So another advice is once you start building your product, try release as soon as possible,
yep.
right? Or if you start operating a you know, as a consultant, try to go out to market to find revenues as soon as possible, right? You cannot rely on a website for when you start when you're starting a company. Again, you have to go to meet people physically, or you know, whether it's on the phone. So a website not going to bring business. It's only when you're Microsoft or the big names or Apple that, you know, people want to go to your website and buy things there, right? Or services. Yeah. So when you're still small, nobody knows about you. And a website not going to help you, or not yet. Later will, but you know, that's not the first key thing. Try to put, and lastly, I would say, try to put the right amount of effort in what you do well as a priority. So if you're a very good salesman, focus on sales, focus on recruiting your customers. Don't go and learn coding, because it's it's the wrong way to spend time. It's the wrong way to get momentum, right? So if you're very good at marketing, right, just go think about how you're going to get spread awareness of you are out there, starting to provide consultancy services or advisory services, or you build up a new payment system or new payment gateway. How would you get that out there to the to the mass and to your close community very quickly? It's very important. And if you're good at coding, go to that maybe. So I'll say that when you start a tech company, it's always good to have potentially three founders, one who's very technical, one who's very sales, and one who's very marketing or operation side. So definitely that's maybe one advice. Three is always better than two, I guess. I think it's a great number, three.
It is a magic number. Oh, Stefano, it has been an absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed your conversation and leaving us with some wise words there. You know, that advice of team, speed, talk to your users and get them as customers quickly, and then making sure that you focus your effort. I mean, some really good points there, and I think something that we can all take from. So it has been a pleasure. We wish you the best of luck with the growth of your company and your endeavors. I know you're doing quite a lot back in our ecosystem. So we look forward to seeing you again and catching you for the coffee. But thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, we thank you, and we can't wait to hear back from you. You've been listening to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, your source of inspiration and action. And we've just had the pleasure of having Stefano Rose on the podcast. And we look forward to seeing what he does in his Australian ecosystem and what he's able to bring back to Africa. Hi, so I'm going to welcome back Mark and Gerald, my co-hosts, to debrief on our interesting conversation with Stefano Rose and his experience being based abroad and still trying to have an impact on the local ecosystem. So guys, what did you take from it? Do you want to start, Gerald?
Yeah, thank you for welcoming me back, Jason. It's a pleasure to be back with you guys. I think first of all, as I said it offline with Stefano, it's a real pleasure when we meet fellow Mauritian that decided that they will broaden their horizons and they take the necessary steps towards it. And on top of that, coming back to the country, right now he's not back in the country, but try to give back to the country in any way they can. And I think this is an important part of the role that the diaspora can play. So kudos to him for that, and I really appreciate that. On the other side, the main things I've noted down from the conversation with him, one of the first points is he pointed out mistakes or failures. That for him something that is a failure, like he considered dropping out of school was in hindsight kind of a mistake and a failure. But what needs to be noted down is that he took the necessary measures. He built on that. He acknowledged that maybe it was a mistake, maybe it's a failure, acknowledging it and then taking the necessary step to turn that around, you know?
Yeah.
Playing with the circumstances and, yeah. and maximizing all the opportunities that is turning around that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something very important that we have to consider. Yeah. Learning from the failure is one thing, but also acknowledging it and capitalizing on the opportunities that shows mm-hmm. up after that is also important.
Yeah, and that failure could be so much bigger if he hadn't have addressed it and done the steps needed to then, you know, take to him where he is. A lot of times that failure in particular, if you drop out, you see yourself stuck in this rut or you'll never be able to grow, but he takes it, he learns from it and does the actions like you say. And I think you raise a great point there, Gerald. It is so true that, you know, it is courage at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is courage. And he mentioned it mm-hmm. many, many times. Yeah, it takes courage for that. And the second point is this, you know, this question that we kind of repeatedly ask ourselves and our guests, mm-hmm. because all of them bring us different perspective. It is that difference between the Mauritian and the local and the global entrepreneurial ecosystem, like mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. this fundamental differences that make, like, you know, in Silicon Valley, we are valuating startups at billions of dollars. And then yeah. in Mauritius, we are struggling to raise 100,000 euros.
5 rupees.
Exactly. You know, this gap is monumental.
Huge. Yeah.
You know, in the US, we are putting rovers on Mars. In Mauritius, we're still figuring out how to park cars, you know. And then he mentioned, you know, the key factors that makes that difference in entrepreneurial system ecosystem that thrives or not. You know, the size of the economy, the availability of the pool of investments. But one important thing that I want to particularly point out there is this cultural drive towards risk taking. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
In Mauritius and to some extent in Africa, if we look at that cultural drive to take risk compared to other side of the world, mm-hmm. I think we have a lot of work to do, a lot of work, even in the entrepreneurial community, even
yeah,
in the startup world where, yes, you have brilliant founding team that decided they will do the first step, take the jump, but then they reach the first hurdle and they're like, you know, shall we not? Let me keep polishing. Let me keep doing my MVP. 2 years after, we're still doing the MVP, you know?
Yeah.
This culture towards risk-taking, we need to step it up. We need to not even improve it. We need to shift the gear fundamentally into that. Yeah. And as long as we don't take that, we will just keep delaying the development of this entrepreneurial ecosystem. We will just keep pushing back the opportunity that we have to really have a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem that is comparable to the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's some good points there. And just to pick up on one of the things you mentioned about that ecosystem and how we view it. I mean, even in Australia, they are behind Silicon Valley. You know, I think it was Atlassian, which was their first $1 billion valuation. Even they are struggling. So we all compare them and say, oh, they're all on the same level, but there is different levels to it. And we need to know, okay, how do we get to that next step? And culture, like you say, is such a big player, such a big part of that, that there needs to be efforts to change that mindset and make it a risk-taking culture where we are enabling people to take those risks. I think that's so true.
Absolutely. And I just want to maybe put some perspective on that. We need to understand, like, I'll just take the example of Mauritius because, you know, mm-hmm. We're here. We also need to put into perspective that we are a very young nation, barely 60 years old. There is this deep-rooted culture of, as he put it very clearly, I'm going to go to school, do my secondary, do my uni, get a degree, get a job, in a bank or in government, do my 9-to-5 and, you know,
and take get loan, fired for the next mandate.
Exactly. Yeah. Take loan, take mortgage, have kids, married.
Done.
That's it.
Life.
And obey a fucking boss for all your years.
So to shift that, it takes courage again.
Yeah.
So those are my points, guys.
Yeah, some great points there. And yourself, Mark, how did you feel?
It was a good one. And I think that a couple of things that struck a chord, because that's something I've been repeating over and again. I think it touched two points. The first point is networking and the importance of the network and reaching out to people and telling, hey, you know, I'm there, I'm doing this. I think that's one of the things when I created my company, this current company I'm driving 2.5 years back. That's the first thing you do. You send an email to people, say, hey, you know what? And I'm just creating that company, blah, blah, blah. That's what it's very interesting actually to see in the next 2 days how many people invite you for lunch. Say, hey, let's have lunch together. And tell me what you do. Of course, not all those meetings will be fruitful. But at least it's a start. You create a chain, and you know, and you need to put all those things together. So that's the first point. The second point, and I think that Hazi is in the tech industry, so he's completely right in saying it's not because you're in the tech that you need to do everything in tech. And that goes back to, you know what? Go and meet people. Go and meet customers. Ask customers to try your things.
Yeah.
Your thing is not finished yet. That's fine. Okay. Let's give it for free to people so that they can test it. They can give you feedback. It's the minimum MVP approach, basically, kind of thing. And I'd say, hey, you know what? I'm not building the most beautiful web service on the planet, and then people will find me, or I'll use Facebook ads and LinkedIn, whatever. You will end up by spending a lot of money and having zero return. Yeah. You need to talk to people. You need to do old-fashioned, old-school demos, presentations, blah, 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 the whole thing. So working the network face-to-face if you can, virtually if you can as well. But that's reaching out to people, talking to people. I think that's...
Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard
hiding
trying.
Behind a website is... Yeah, it's hard, but you know, it's just, well, we're humans, you know. We want to talk to humans. I know that everybody, and we all did it, you purchase a service or a software or whatever through Google search. Yeah, sometimes it happens, but most of the times it's just because somebody referred it to you. You said, I'm looking for this, so you reach out to somebody, and that somebody will tell you, oh, by the way, I want to talk to you about this thing or this guy or this service. So I just wanted to react on what you said about, you know, that big valuations and all those things. I think that to me it's a smokescreen, and I'm sorry about one point I disagree with somehow is like, well, I'm a dropout from college or from university, and then I succeeded in life. You know, the example of Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos, or for that respect, is completely flawed.
Yeah.
Because out of 200 dropouts, one succeeds, and 199, you know, take different routes. And so what I want to say about that is, well, I agree that school and studies are broken, but you can invent your life differently, and you shouldn't be a dropout to succeed. There are some very good guys who did PhDs and succeed. So it's not mutually exclusive. And the second piece is, don't look at the $1 billion valuation. You know, even if you owe, or if you're valued ₹1 million, which makes 20,000 euros, well, you know what? You've built something, and there is a big moment of pride the moment you send your first invoice and you get your first check, because that proves one point: you're capable of selling, you're capable of delivering value to somebody else, and that moment, you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I agree. You mentioned a point there that I think, you know, touches a chord with all of us, and something we haven't explored that much on the show. It's that notion of dropping out of school in order to follow your entrepreneurial passion. Now, in a lot of times where we see the success of that happening, and these are the stories that we're told, you know, they literally drop out of university or college or whatever the case may be because they can't handle their business. It's growing so fast. There's so much involvement, so much attention needed that they then shift focus. It is not done so that they drop out of school and then find what they want to do as an entrepreneur. You know, that narrative that is somewhat skewed that we have, that, oh, you don't need to go to school, you don't need to go to university, you can still do it because look, they did it. They did it in a very different way. They were both in higher education, and they then shifted their gears when the time was right because they couldn't handle the you know, focus that was needed. But I know, Gerald, you have a point to make on this. What's your view on that?
Yeah, my view actually joins yours. And to add on to that, and this is maybe where, I don't know if it's a misunderstanding or a completely different view from what you just voiced out, Mark, like, it is not that we are saying, or Stefano is saying, yeah, I drop out of school and then I made it. Well, boy, if you actually don't put the effort into school, don't think that you will just drop out and then miracle will happen. Even if you drop out, man, you will need to put the effort. You will need to have your plan. You will need to have your head on your shoulders and know what the hell you're doing to be able to make it. Like, even if the example of Jobs and Gates and Bezos is a little bit skewed, yes, but these guys, man, they've been working like 21 hours a night, you know, a day. It did not happen in a flick of a finger just because they drop out of school. So we need to put that into context, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
It's just there is no causality. And I think that's what I wanted to close on.
Yes, I agree on
that. I agree on that. School is broken in one way. School is broken because it has been built upon the belief that you can school everybody the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's completely wrong. It's completely wrong. I love the fact that Stefano was making about, if you don't know how to code and you're good at selling, don't learn how to code. Sharpen the saw at selling.
Yeah, exactly.
And the same thing. So you put somebody who loves doing things with their hands, learning philosophy or whatever in a school, the guy will fail.
Yeah, we're judging a fish on his capability to fly.
Yeah, exactly. Climbing a tree.
Exactly. Yeah. So I agree. 100% agree with you that there's no how you say causality.
Yeah.
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 And I think that word causality is a good one. And I actually really enjoyed our conversation, gentlemen, today. I think it's been a pleasure. I hope our listeners have got the same value that we've got out of this conversation. And I look forward to our next interview next week. You've been listening to Entrepreneurs Talk Africa, a source of inspiration and action from African leaders and founders. Thank you.